Airplane Intel Podcast, episode 74. This week, we interview master aircraft appraiser and values expert, Jeremy Cox.
Aircraft appraising is my passion. I love living within my aviation bubble and focused entirely on aircraft values.
Coming up, we discuss everything you should know about valuing an aircraft.
Are you an aircraft owner, pilot, or mechanic? Do you want to learn how to increase safety, reduce risk, and save money with your airplane? Then you are in the right place. This is the Airplane Intel Podcast, the only show that tells you how to make aircraft ownership simple, safe, and cost-effective. Featuring the pre-buy guys and brought to you by CoFlight.com. We bring over 100 years combined experience flying, maintaining, and managing all types of aircraft. If you're ready to make smarter decisions and get more out of your airplane, stay tuned.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Airplane Intel Podcast. We're an aviation podcast that focuses on the ins and outs of airplane ownership. I'm Adam. I'm a CFI, AMPIA, and Marine Corps veteran. I'm also joined by my co-host Don, a seasoned airline transport pilot, A&P, and pre-buy expert. It's our goal to help you make safer and smarter decisions when it comes to buying, maintaining, and selling your personal or business aircraft. On the show, we compare airplanes, interview airplane owners and industry experts, and of course, share real-world tips as professional pilots and mechanics working in the field with aircraft buyers and owners. You can learn more about the solutions we offer at airplaneintel.com. Now, today's episode is brought to you by our friends at CoFlight.com, intelligent aircraft management software for pilot peace of mind. Our listeners can get a free 60-day trial of CoFlight's innovative desktop and mobile app by heading over to CoFlight.com and entering the promo code PREBUY at checkout. That's Charlie Oscar Foxtrot Lima Yankee Tango.com and entering PREBUY. Trust me when I tell you, once you start using CoFlight, you'll wonder how you ever flew without it. Now, today's interview was made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. If you'd like to help support the show and get more from our podcast, head over to patreon.com/prebuyguys. And speaking of Patreon, I'd like to welcome our latest Patreon supporter, Mallory Fuller, who is kindly donating $5 per month as an official show producer. Thank you, Mallory, for your continued support and to all our patrons who help make this show possible. To add to the conversation or share your feedback, shoot an email to feedback@airplaneintelpodcast.com. Lastly, don't forget to check out the show notes to access episode archives, links, videos, and other free resources for airplane ownership by going to airplaneintelpodcast.com. When we're helping one of our clients buy or sell an airplane, a question that comes up virtually 100% of the time is, how do I know what this airplane is worth? Valuing an airplane can be difficult and downright dubious because aircraft values revolve around a plethora of variables, such as market trends, aircraft condition, aircraft history, total times, modifications, and even the integrity of its maintenance records. In today's episode, our guest, Jeremy Cox, will shed some light on the process of valuing and appraising an aircraft. Jeremy is the founder of Jet Values Jeremy and is an experienced pilot, aircraft mechanic, aviation consultant, and senior certified aircraft appraiser. Jeremy is also a columnist for AvBuyer Magazine. You can reach out to Jeremy by going to his website, www.jetvaluesjeremy.com. I'm really excited for this interview, so let's get right into it. Today, we're speaking with Jeremy Cox, president of Jet Values Jeremy, an aviation consulting and appraisal firm. Jeremy, I'm really excited to speak with you today. Thank you for spending some time with us on the podcast.
You are most welcome, Adam. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to talk to you because you are full of a lot of very interesting information, and I know our viewers are really going to appreciate the things that you have to say. These are the questions that we get the most. So before we get into it, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure, absolutely. I'm an American Society of Appraisers accredited senior appraiser, machinery and technical specialties, leaning towards aircraft. I hold a valid AMP certificate with ratings, inspection authorization. I also hold my FCC with radar endorsement. I've got 1,200 plus hours on a commercial multi-instrument ticket, but I don't have a medical, so I don't fly anymore. I've flown the Cessna Conquest and the Citation 650, I've done 2 Atlantic deliveries in light aircraft, and I have air-towed targets. I've also taught crop dusting at an operation in Oklahoma. My maintenance experience is very broad, from light aircraft through Lockheed, Boeing, and Airbus, large aircraft. I've been a director of maintenance several times. I've been a chief inspector. I have been the accountable manager of a PMA, assisted 2 companies to get an FAA repair station certificate. I have written several AAIPs, approved aircraft inspection programs. So I kind of lean towards the technical side. I've also bought and sold 70 different types, makes and models of jets, turboprops, and airliners. Also did 1 helicopter, but I'm not really strong on helicopters. But I am strong on appraising them. My first appraisal was performed in August 1999. Since then, I've appraised 151 different makes and models of aircraft and have appraised almost 400 individual aircraft, meaning that I have written reports on each. How I got into appraising: I started appraising aircraft when I was invited to join Jet Brokers in 1999 to buy and sell business jets and turboprops. At first, my appraisals were to support either a listing or a sale, i.e. what will I get for my aircraft if I sell it, or how much will I pay for a specific aircraft, that kind of appraisal situation. But soon I had banks coming to me asking me to appraise an aircraft in support of a loan. I also had executives and attorneys coming to me for aircraft value and legal proceedings. I was also asked to be an expert witness, giving value opinions under oath several times. In 2014, I decided to get my accreditation, my certification as an aircraft appraiser. For this, I joined the NAAA, which is the National Aircraft Appraisers Association, and took their 24-month program to become both a certified appraiser and a certified buyer's agent. In 2018, I decided to retire from aircraft sales. In the following year, I also went to Embry-Riddle Aviation University to take the American Society of Appraisers Aircraft Appraisal Program. In 2019, I founded Jet Values Jeremy and went full-time aircraft appraising. Last year, I appraised 54 individual aircraft, 20 of which were full on-site audits and evaluations, including a trip to La Paz, Bolivia, which was fun for a mining company there. I actually bought and sold several of those airplanes that were turned into air tankers for fighting fires back when I was with Jet Brokers. I also was selected to appraise the world's rarest business jet, which is the McDonnell 119-220. As well as, when I say it's the world's rarest business jet, there's only one in existence. Hmm. So I did the appraisal late last year for the gentleman. He's looking to donate the airplane to a museum. And I also got to appraise the Wolf of Wall Street's flying boat. He had a Seawind 3000T, a turbine version of the Seawind, which would sit atop his yacht. Fortunately, it wasn't on top of the yacht when the yacht sank off Sardinia in the Mediterranean that's shown in that movie about him. But so far this year, I've appraised 39 individual airplanes, but none of them on site due to the COVID-19 travel restrictions. I had some good engagements that I ended up having to do as desktops because I couldn't travel. Aircraft appraising is my passion. I love living within my aviation bubble and focused entirely on aircraft values. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, it's a very interesting story. You've got an enormous amount of experience, both sides of aviation, the maintenance and also the flying, and now using that, putting them together for evaluating airplanes. That's really great. And that's a really important piece of the puzzle when it comes to buying an airplane and selling an airplane, and even insuring an airplane as you go through your ownership phase with an aircraft. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the trends you're seeing in the used aircraft markets in terms of overall values?
I do see and follow trends, and I can tell you that there are more than 440,000 general aviation aircraft operating worldwide. Half of these are based here in the United States and a third in Europe. Approximately 39,000 are turbine business aircraft, 32,000 are helicopters. The world's most prolific light aircraft is the Cessna 172. There's more than 44,000 individual aircraft built. 2020 Cessna 172S model is right at $400,000 today new. The average price of all 172s, if you lump them all together from the 60s all the way up, is about $95,000, so across the board. So the residual value is approximately 25%. It appears values of the 172s or that type of airplane are trending upward. The 737, Boeing 737, is the most prolific large aircraft with 11,000 individual aircraft built. 2020 737 MAX is somewhere around $50 million. The average price, and the reason I say circa or around, is because the airlines cut their own deals. So The average price of all the 737s lumped together, excluding the BBJ series, is about $10 million. So if you want to buy a 737 used, on average, it's around $10 million. Residual value is approximately 20%. And I can say values for those are trending down, especially with COVID. Surprisingly enough, the Russians have got us on the most prolific helicopter. There's the Mil Mi-8, the HIP, they call it. There's almost 18,000 of these helicopters in the world. A 2020 Mil-8 is $12 million US. The average price is about $4 million. So the residual value is approximately above 30%, and values appear to be stable. Going on to turboprops, the King Air is the most prolific turboprop with more than 4,000 aircraft built. A 2020 King Air 350i is $7 million. The average price of all King Airs lumped together is about $3 million. So the residual value is approximately just slightly above 40%, and values are stable. The Citation series is the most prolific business jet series with almost 7,000 individual Citations built out there. A 2020 Citation Longitude is $22 million. The average price of all Citations lumped together is about $2.25 million, but that's kind of unfair to the Longitude and the Latitude and the later models, because obviously there's a lot of airplanes that were built in the 70s that are still flying. But residual value is approximately slightly above 40%. And I can say I've done quite a few Citations this year, appraisal-wise. So I've done quite a few King Airs as well, but values are trending upward on the Citations. The world's most popular turboprop is the Cessna Caravan series, amazingly enough, with almost 25 operating worldwide. A 2020 Grand Caravan EX is $2.7 million. The average price is about $1.3 million, so the residual value is almost 50%. And again, values appear to be trending upward. It's been this way for a number of years in the business aviation field. You've got the most popular turboprop being the Caravan. These are the most transacted airplanes, too, each year. And then you've got, on the jet side, it's the Gulfstream G550. But you got to understand, there's almost 600 of them built and operating in the world. And it's a current production airplane, as is the Caravan. So it's a very strong airplane. From the point of view of longevity, it's got competition from in-house with the new Gulfstreams. Unfortunately, the values are trending downward. There's a number of reasons behind that, but a 2020 G550 is $62 million list price. The average price is about $19 million if you lump them all together, and the residual value is just above 30%. But like I say, values are trending downward on those airplanes. Based upon the examples I've provided, you can see if you average everything out, all the airplanes I've talked about, across the board, the average residual value is about 35%. What do I mean by residual value? Yeah, you take the new price that somebody paid for that airplane when it was delivered to them. You track average retail prices, sale prices, basically. And it's, you know, it's a combination between asking prices and selling prices. You kind of find the middle road because, as you know, the FAA bill of sale has a place for you to write in what you pay for the airplane. No one ever does. You put $1 or $10 plus OVC, other value considerations. So nobody ever quotes it, unlike the real property with houses and buildings and businesses and so forth. So across the board, we're seeing about 35% residual value. So airplanes today are at about 35% of what they were when they were delivered new. One of the reasons for this residual value rising, and I see it rising, is because globally the inventory of available aircraft is very slowly dropping. In July 2009, which was the peak, really right before we went into the global financial crisis, there were 6,016 business jets, turboprops, and helicopters advertised for sale. This was the most ever in BizAv history, and it reflected 12% of the entire fleet up for sale at the time. They reported last month, in April, 4,549 aircraft were advertised for sale, which is equivalent to 7% of the entire fleet. So you can see we were at the absolute peak at 12%. We're down to 7% of the entire fleet. And part of that is the fleet has actually gone down. So a lot of airplanes have been knocked on the head, some because of ADS-B, a lot long before that were hit because of stage three. You know, there's been several mandates that have put the older dinosaur aircraft to bed anyway. The trend has shown that the inventory of available aircraft has been diminishing since the high in mid-2009. The highest average asking prices, business jets, turboprops, and helicopters all combined, if you take all the business jets and turboprops and helicopters and combine them together and average them out, you'll see that we're currently sitting at 2,950,000 with a gradual upward trend. What's interesting is December 2008, which was, I guess, right before or during the trip over the cliff, the global financial crisis, the amalgam, I call it the amalgam price, each was 4,900,000, so just shy of 5 million. So, you know, we're about half of that, a little over half, sitting right now. I can tell you what's interesting and disturbing is the sales transactions are really down. And that's really, I believe, because of COVID. Jet transactions are currently indicating that they're 50% down on 2019. This was as of, what is it, Tuesday today? This was as of Friday when I last looked at this. 537 year-to-date transactions on jets, business jets, versus 2034 and 2019. So that's significant. Turboprops, same thing. They're 50% down. 328 year-to-date versus 1,232. And helicopters are also 50% down. 263 year-to-date versus 909 in the same period of 2019. I think people are just waiting to see with this COVID deal.
I agree.
People, I think, were wanting to bring their airplanes on the market, holding tight. When the lockdowns finally end, will we see a massive spike in transactions? I don't know. I've done a lot of appraisals this year. I've done a lot for banks for financing. There have been several transactions I know have been put on hold because I was queued up to do the appraisals for the bank, and they just kind of sitting tight.
What I've seen since the lockdown is an increase in people doing research on airplanes, where typically my clients would come to me and within a few days be wanting to move forward on a pre-buy. Now I have a long list of clients that I'm working with on a consulting basis to do research on airplanes, going through the records and the logbooks and trying to get an idea of what a asking price would be. And then there's some email traffic or phone calls between the prospective buyer and the owner or the broker of the airplane. But no one, like you say, is really pulling the trigger on anything right now because either they can't logistically make it work because of the travel restrictions, or they're not sure if the airplane is going to change in price. And something that I noted in a previous podcast episode was that the asking prices for airplanes, I haven't seen any change in asking price per se since COVID, but based on the feedback I'm getting from the folks I'm working with, there is a lot more negotiation occurring for a reduction in the asking price because now the demand for the airplanes is less. There's less competition now to drive the price up or to keep the price closer to the original asking price. So anyway, I think that's kind of interesting. And I've been kind of keeping track of aircraft for sale inventory just simply using Trade-A-Plane or Controller. I thought I would see a larger number of aircraft being put on the market. There has been a slight increase kind of overall on average, but not as much as I thought. But like you say, the number of transactions is actually gone down, which is something that we kind of predicted would happen. I mean, it just makes sense. I think that's going to be short-lived, though, like you were saying. Overall, this is going to come back to normal probably, and perhaps we'll have a small window where the perceived value of an airplane or the asking price, or however you want to put it, is less than what it has been trending over the past, say, a couple of years. But I think that window is going to be very short, and I think overall the prices are going to start going up in value again in most markets anyway, maybe not all of them. To those folks thinking about buying an airplane, I think it's probably, you know, in the next 6 months might be a pretty good time for you. And for those wanting to make the most of their investment with their current airplane, maybe it makes sense to wait a little bit to sell that thing. So with that, Jeremy, please tell us a little bit about what you're seeing, maybe some changes overall in aircraft value or just in the market, I mean, since COVID.
It's interesting. Your opinion mirrors mine to a large extent. I think what's interesting from the appraisal standpoint, I think the light aircraft below 12.5, they've been strong for a number of years now.
Yes.
And I've seen examples with specialized airplanes like the American Champions that have the big wheels for backcountry flying. Goodness, I've seen those airplanes go up 15,000-20,000 a year in the last few years. So things are pretty strong on the light aircraft side of it.
Yeah, especially single engine, like four-place single engines. We've been watching those values trend upward for the last 3 or 4 years at, you know, 5% or more a year, and it's crazy to me. And of course, a lot of folks trying to get into the into aircraft ownership and, you know, using a Cessna 172, let's say, as an entry airplane are really having a hard time because they're asking a lot of money for these airplanes and they're being sold. You know, it's the market's bearing those prices so far. So maybe this will be the COVID a positive thing that can come from it, perhaps, is that it stabilizes the rapid appreciation or market value of some of the lighter four-place single-engine airplanes.
I think you're right. I don't have a background in the smaller aircraft over the last 30 years. I did at the beginning of my career, so I'm not a great reference for the smaller airplanes, but I do watch the business jet and turboprop marketplace pretty closely, so I can tell you what's going on with that. It's interesting when I do everything from ultralights all the way up to Boeing Airbus equipment, so it's from an appraisal standpoint, so I get to see it. And when I went full-time appraising last year with my own company, I realized how strong the light aircraft market was, because I wasn't in that marketplace until I went full-time appraising. And it's like, my goodness, look at that. And you can watch the trends and see it. So like you, I really am compelled to say that personally, I have not observed or recorded any significant drops in values due to coronavirus. I have, however, seen sporadic asking price drops, which are likely panic driven by sellers who are absolutely compelled to sell right now. But I think they're rare, to be honest. I've been involved, or at least participating, with Alistair White's corporate jet investor town hall meetings. He holds them every Wednesday through the Crowdcast webinar service. And on every Wednesday, there's usually just over 500 industry people like me participate in these weekly meetings and converse back and forth and throw out ideas and thoughts. It's almost like going to church, really, where you sit down and you say, well, what do you think? Everyone throws their opinion in the hat. But what's interesting is the points resulting from these meetings, and they've been going on now for more than a month, is COVID still is a long-term event. Today's values are definitely affected by the coronavirus. The airliner, the big airplane markets, the 737s on up, they've seen a 40% drop in values. It's pretty instantaneous. It's pretty obvious. Obviously, you see the MAXs that were on hold anyway because of their software issues with the autopilot system. But we're seeing people dumping their positions on those. And we're seeing the world's airlines pretty much shut down. Now, I did read yesterday that Lufthansa is looking to get about 1,700 flights in a day starting next week, ramping up to it, which is a good sign. But there's been so many airline bankruptcies. The carnage from COVID is in the airliner size airplane. That's where the carnage is. But the opinion of the attendees on the corporate jet investor town halls is to get a transaction done today quickly. The expectation is a drop between 10 and 25% to facilitate a quick close. I got to say, the biggest problem with the COVID situation, the travel restrictions, and getting deals done and closed, an airplane may have been in pre-buy and it's keyed up, ready to go. But the biggest issue we're seeing, pilots. You just can't. I mean, we had a pilot problem going into this. It seems that we no longer have a pilot problem going ahead after COVID stops, the lockdown stopped, because a lot of people have been laid off and there's a lot of pilots out there looking for work. But it's physically being able to get a pilot to the airplanes. Usually in the airplanes I deal with, it's a two-man crew, getting the pilots there to actually do the test flight and do the delivery flight and do the positioning flight. That seems to be the biggest problem. I truly believe, genuinely believe, business aviation and personal aviation will explode as soon as the lockdowns are over. Coronavirus is pretty much done. I don't think anyone with any kind of wealth that enables them to use business aviation, private aviation, personal aviation, I don't think any of them want to get back on the airlines. And I don't believe they will. So it's inevitable that we're going to have a boom. It's just going to explode.
Yes.
I haven't seen any change, but there are sporadic drops, but I expect it to explode when we get back to business.
Yes, absolutely agree with you on that. And we will have to just wait and see. But like you say, the mobility that private aviation gives you, which we now see can be an issue with the commercial airlines, and it's going to take some time, you know, could be months or years before the airlines reach its normal capacity that we've been used to. And we still need to travel to places. So the folks that have the resources to get involved in general aviation, business aviation, etc., are likely going to do it, whether it's through charter or through fractional or through full-on ownership. I think there's going to be a spike. And of course, what that means is that values of airplanes are going to start rising again when those trends catch up. Speaking of which, you know, when you look at these major listing sites, you know, Controller Traded Plane, ASO, et cetera, our listeners often see a wide range of aircraft asking prices. Everything has a value, of course, each component, each modification, and even the airplane's history. Can you tell us a little bit about how you approach valuing an airplane and kind of give us some pointers as to how we can maybe circumvent a value, you know, just by looking at a listing? Because why is this airplane $30,000 or $50,000 more than this one? It's confusing to people.
And that makes sense. But before we go there, Adam, I think it's important just to lay out the methodology that goes into valuing an airplane. There are three conventional and generally accepted approaches to value. An appraiser's standpoint forms the basis of everything. It's not just somebody pulls a number out of their bottom and says, I think I'm going to ask this for this airplane, which happens a lot. And that's why you see those wild and crazy numbers and variances advertised online. And let's not forget that a lot of those airplanes advertised online aren't even real. They may have sold two, three, 4 or 5 years ago, or some of them, the ones that don't have serial numbers or N numbers, then it's a hook to actually get you to call so the person advertising can say, well, that airplane sold, but we've got this one. Mm-hmm. And they usually don't have a listing on it either. It's a big switch. There's generally three approaches to value. It's the cost approach, the sales comparison or market approach, which is mainly what I follow along with, and the income approach. So each of these approaches is based on the principle of substitution, which states that no buyer will pay more for an asset than the cost to replace it. Cost approach is basically you calculate the replacement cost new. It's probably not in a new condition, the airplane that you're trying to appraise. So you have to put a depreciation adjustment in for the loss in value different between it being new and where it currently is. The elements of depreciation consider the physical deterioration, that's maintenance, wear and tear, etc. Functional obsolescence, great example are airplanes that have four engines instead of two, need a flight engineer to operate, things like that. And then economic obsolescence, no parts availability, no check pilots, noise, RBSM, ADS-B, things like that when applicable. Cost approach is pretty rare. This is a sad thing to say, but because none of us like accidents, but a cost approach might be something that you do if an insurance company comes to me and says, you know, this is very sad. There's a smoking hole in the ground. This airplane did exist. We need to know what it was worth. And you don't have the airplane itself to reference, so you might do the cost approach. The market approach is what I do all the time. I'll come back to that. Let's do the income approach. The income approach is very rare also. I'll do it for a museum if required. Sometimes it's more accurate to get a value as a museum piece rather than an airplane that's physically flying. It requires me to figure out the earning capacity of the airplane and the expected capacity, whether it is derived from past, current, or projected earnings. I capitalize it at a rate sufficient to satisfy the investment requirements. And basically, you come up with a value for that aircraft, but it's based on income. And like I said, it's very rare. Museum airplanes are pretty much where the income approach is used. Market approach, that's the meat and potatoes of aircraft values. So it relies on the assumption that the value of the asset can be measured by the selling or asking prices of similar assets, either individually or collectively in the used marketplace. Examples of possible adjustments include those for age, hours, cycles, condition, equipment, modification, maintenance, and inspection status. The location, date, and type of sale, whether it's a retail sale, auction sale, or asking price. When using this approach, it's vital to adjust the comparative aircraft to match the subject aircraft, never the other way around. I'm going to say that again. This is going to have significance later on when we get to that point talking about the value guides. When you use the market approach, the sales comparison approach, it's vital to adjust the comparative aircraft to match the subject aircraft, never the other way around. With that said, I'm going to talk about some adjustments that I've just recently did for a CJ2. When I do the market approach, I rarely use asking prices because I'd rather have an actual sale, a reported sale, and I will get on the phone. I will call the people involved in that sale and say, so what were you asking at the time of the sale? And if we've got a relationship over the years, I bought and sold airplanes for 20 years, so I've got a pretty good number of people that I've shared information with over the years, and they share it back. And so often I'll know exactly what the airplane sold for. But the times when I don't have the relationship, then, you know, I'll probably take 5, 7, 8, 9% off the number they give me. And, well, I think that's probably more like what it sold for. But I take 8 previous sales. I don't like to take airplanes that are currently on the market because there's no real data. It's just an asking price, which changes. I try and take it for the make and model of the airplane, but sometimes you can't. An example is the world's rarest business jet. It's the only one in existence. So the only thing I could do, it actually was designed and built for the same government contract. The Lockheed Jetstar won that contract. So the Jetstar has 4 engines. The McDonnell has 4 engines. They're different types of engines. But in fact, I went back as far as 1992 when these airplanes, the Jetstars were trading, and I used Jetstar as my base for the comparison. And basically I adjusted those sales prices for CPI, percentage increase each year from the date of the sale, as far back as 1992. And then I equalized the value between the Pratt & Whitney JT12A-8 engine, which is on the Jetstar, and the Westinghouse GE J34 WE34 engines on the 119. Fortunately for me, one of my previous customers when I was buying and selling airplanes is the owner of the type certificate of the J34 engine. Therefore, I had very accurate overhaul numbers for it. Let's see. at the beginning of the month, I did a fair market value and orderly liquidation value. The banks require that of a 2003 CJ2. It had the Atlas Tamarack winglets, and it was for bank financing. My sales comparison spreadsheet, you remember, you take the comparable aircraft and you adjust them against the subject airplane. I had 27 individual adjustments for a CJ2 because the field was so wide with winglets, without winglets. Basically, my adjustments were year of manufacture, aircraft total time, engine one, engine two, time since overhaul, engine plan. One aircraft didn't have the total assurance program, TAP. It meant that those engines had a different TBO schedule. If you're a non-TAP engine of the Williams, you've only got a 3,500 hour TBO. If you're on the TAP program, you get a 5,000 hour TBO. So there's an adjustment to be made for that. The paint year, interior year, GTN 750 Garmin, GTN 650 Garmin. There were quite a few that had the GNS 530Ws. So I had to adjust those against the GTN 750 or 650. GTX 3000, which the subject airplane had. So I had to adjust several of those that didn't have the Garmin transponders at all. And several of them had the GTX 330D. So I had to show the adjustment between those winglets. Lopresti boom beam landing lights, Garmin GDL 6930 for display, ProLine 21, TCAS 2, TCAS 1 versus TCAS 2, Skywatch versus TCAS 2, UNS 1K FMS or equivalent, Mark 5 EGPWS. Most of them had Mark 7 EGPWS, which is a lesser system, provides less safety margin than the Mark 5. So the Mark 5 is more expensive, had to adjust for that. Some airplanes have cockpit voice recorders, some don't. So CBR, the particular airplane had an AeroM SATCOM system. And several of them had the ST-3100. So I had to figure out the difference between those. And then lastly, the belted potty. But the reason for going through my list 27 adjustments, and I'm sorry if it's boring, I know it is, but it kind of speaks back to how you started talking about understanding the values, the wide variety that are out on controller and ASO and all the other sites that have airplanes for sale. There are a lot of elements to deriving their value, and they have to be considered. Everyone has to be considered. There are several types of value: fair market value, orderly liquidation value. I actually do a 5 and 15 year liquidation value schedule for the banks. Suggested asking price. I do a lot of suggested asking prices for brokers and dealers, and predicted selling prices too. If I can establish the fair market value and then establish the suggested asking price based off that, and you know, it's a sales comparison based on 8 different airplanes and looking at market trends, because the market approach, I'm adjusting airplanes that have sold. But when it comes to determining asking price and selling price, you've got to really take in the trends. And you're not taking in the trends when you do the spreadsheet to figure out adjusting the comparative sales to the subject airplane. There's a lot of reasons why people ask for appraisal. Sellers wishing to put their aircraft up for sale. Buyers wishing to know what price they should pay for a specific airplane, bank financing, tax assessment, estate or gift taxes. I did a fleet of 13 airplanes earlier this year for a company that the owner for decades is gifting the company and all its assets to his daughters. Obviously, there's tax due on it. So I did a 13 airplane fleet for him for federal tax, non-cash charitable contribution. Insurance claims, diminution, damage, total loss, and legal claims. So those are the elements that go into determining the value of something.
Very interesting. And it's very similar to what we do in maintenance. It's all dependent on the specific airplane, and everything is on condition. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, but we can begin to assess the airplane's value based on the listing or the spec sheet for the airplane by looking at the year, make, and model, and the total time on the airframe, and the engine time, and if there's any programs on the aircraft or avionics upgrades that they list, etc. I mean, we can use some of the specs that we get in the listing to begin formulating a value for the airplane. And then as we learn more about the aircraft going through the FAA records or going through the logs and the maintenance records, and then eventually seeing the airplane in person, we can add and subtract value based on that. But ultimately, it comes down to having an idea of what the baseline value is. What's the starting point for that particular make and model? What is the airframe time worth? You know, how much do we depreciate that per hour based on the average total time of the airplane, or practical things that people can do themselves without really much assistance is figuring out the value of the engine time. So we just take the cost of the overhaul and divide it by the TBO, and we can get an idea of dollars per hour plus or minus whatever that engine time is. It explains, like you say, why there's so much variance in the asking prices. And of course, an asking price is just an asking price, not necessarily the sales price. But the more prepared the buyer is, in, say, this case of someone looking to buy an airplane, the better off they're going to be knowing what they should be offering for that airplane, what's fair and what can be realistically expected as an outcome for that negotiation. And you touched on this as well. So there's other times that we need to know the value of the airplane, insurance, tax, maybe some other legal reasons, etc. So that's very interesting. And so I think that will really help people put things into perspective for folks that are just kind of unsure how to approach this. And we're going to get into the pricing guides in just a minute. But first, can you kind of tell us big picture what some of the similarities and differences are between evaluating a turbine airplane and evaluating a piston airplane? Because the turbine aircraft have more going on in terms of variables that can affect the value. Can you just kind of touch on that?
It's important to see an airplane when you're talking about buying. I actually went to the Philippines years ago to, I was buying a Falcon 900B back when they had a lot of value. Mm-hmm. And a client sent me out, and I used to, when I went to buy an airplane, I'd go out and look at three different airplanes. So, you know, I'd narrow it down to a short list of three airplanes with the concurrence, full concurrence for the person I was working for. And I'd go see the airplanes. I wouldn't pull any panels, wouldn't open anything up. I'd walk around, take a look at it. And you can sense if an airplane's been taken care of. This is something I can't stress enough, especially for pressurized airplanes, bigger airplanes that have airtight seals. You stick your head in. If it smells damp, walk away. The smell of mildew is usually a precursor of corrosion. And you didn't have to take a screwdriver to a panel, open anything up to know that. And pictures too. I mean, it's amazing, especially in the Citation side of things. Cessna does a fabulous job of presenting their new airplanes at delivery, and they take pictures of the airplane in the delivery center. Well, so many airplanes that may be 5, 6, 10 years old, they're up for sale. You see them on the controller or ASO, and they've got the delivery pictures showing right. What the airplane looks like. But the airplane's 10 years old. It doesn't look like that. There's no way. So you're going to go see them. When you're a buyer, you've got to be completely objective and extremely well-informed. If you're not in possession of objectiveness and information, then I'm sorry. There's a high probability that there's immense disappointment and regret looming in your future. You can drop a lot of money into a bad airplane without realizing it.
It's just the way it is. It's human nature. What sells an airplane in a lot of cases, especially for owner pilots, is paint and interior and avionics. And that doesn't speak to the structural or mechanical, you know, soundness of the airplane. It's just cosmetic stuff. Just harping on your point, I mean, we have to be objective, completely objective. And yes, paint and interior matter to an extent. They have value, of course. Avionics have value, of course. But it's not the most important thing on the airplane by any stretch of the imagination. So you really got to be objective when you're looking at these airplanes and not drooling over the shiny paint, right?
I'm sure listeners and watchers of this webinar have heard the term lipstick on a pig or making a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Yes. That's basically it in a lot of cases. So you've got a problem. And that problem is only solved with you buying an airplane or leasing an airplane. So you know what your problem is. You know what those parameters are. So you've got to try and match the ideal airplane to those requirements, those parameters that you need to fill that specific need, that requirement. So that problem. The problem is, for you as a buyer, it's a compromise because it's highly unlikely you're going to find absolutely the perfect airplane to fill that requirement that you've got. You've got to get away from emotion. You've got to stick to your parameters. You know what you need to achieve. You've got to buy the right airplane for your needs. Cut the emotion, be clinical, and be objective. There's a lot of variations, connotations related to a specific make and model of the airplane. You know, you've heard the term knowledge is king. Without having all the available knowledge known and understood by you before going to look at an airplane, you're immediately at a disadvantage against sellers who know what they've got or what you are up against from competing airplanes. You know, they've probably looked at comparative airplanes against their airplanes and figured out where they fit into the market. And they know the strengths and weaknesses. If you don't know the strengths and weaknesses of not specifically that airplane, but of that make and model, then you're lacking information, you're lacking the knowledge. Well, basically, you could be starting out looking for an airplane and you're looking at the wrong make and model from the very get-go because you haven't really done the analysis and understood all the parameters. And there's always a dilemma between a buyer and a seller. I saw this 20 years buying and selling airplanes at jet brokers. It makes me laugh because the parties are diametrically opposed to each other. They may be friendly, but the seller's approach is always, especially with small airplanes or personally flown airplanes, where the owners are really involved with the airplanes. I mean, for corporate flight departments, this rarely comes up. But for personally owned airplanes, the seller is going to think, whoa, they're going to say, you know, that when Cessna built this Citation, they really took care and attention during the build. And therefore, I can tell you that this is the absolute best Citation that Cessna has ever built. You will be extremely lucky if you are able to buy it from me. Also, this is the one that gets me. This gets me every time. I paid $3.5 million for that airplane. And over the last 8 years since I bought it, I put over $1 million of maintenance into that airplane. So this airplane's got to be worth at least $4.5 million by now. So come at me, make me an offer, which is crazy. Doing service bulletins, doing ADs, performing maintenance, you're maintaining a value. You're not adding value. So that's why you need a broker involved because the broker is the middleman. Mm-hmm. Instead of each party, the buyer and the seller, getting upset with each other because they're throwing stones at each other verbally and they're rubbing up against each other. And usually somebody that owns an airplane and somebody looking to buy an airplane, they have a pretty big ego. They're pretty big people. They've got strong beliefs and ideas. And so if you're diametrically opposed to each other, it's going to be pretty dynamite. You need the broker to be there as the grease between two metal plates that are rubbing up against each other. Going on specifically to your question, the differences between a piston and turbine aircraft, when you are looking to move out of the piston world into the turbine world, obviously apart from costs, which are enormous compared to piston aircraft, the operational differences are these, especially if you're an owner flown. Your total flight time will be based upon and recorded as weight off and weight on wheels. Tack time is not used. Tack time is inaccurate at best. A tachometer always accumulates more time than a weight on wheel switch or an air switch, but it works for the little airplanes, but it's not relevant with the turbine airplanes. It's required. Weight off and weight on wheels. All landings are gonna be counted, you know, apart from touch and goes. Really, there's methodology behind it because you need to start tracking cycles because the cycles are critical to the engine life because the engine is hour or calendar based for certain inspections, but there's life-limited parts in the turbine engines, discs, mainly discs. They could be compressor turbine discs. They could be spaces. They could be combustion liners, the shafts, or basically the things that go really, really fast at very high temperatures. They've got a cycle life, and you've got to track that. So you go from the piston world where, you know, you might record landings, but it's pretty rare, to religiously having to track your cycles because the engine life's governed by it. You're going to go from having an annual inspection, and you may keep three logbooks, airframe, engine, propeller. You're going to get to a point where you cannot physically keep in your head the maintenance schedule of your airplane or your mechanic. It's physically impossible, because there's a lot of parts and components in a turbine airplane that have to be tracked. They have to be tracked for hours, dates, cycles, and so forth. And therefore, you're going to become very intimate with a computerized aircraft maintenance program. Back in the old days, before computers, I'm actually old enough to remember this, and I did some D checks on bigger airplanes that wasn't computerized. You literally had these massive, great boxes at work stands that had 4x5 index cards, and every tracked item on that airplane, including inspections. I mean, you A, B, C, D, E, F, G, inspection, whatever, had their own card. But every component, every flap drive actuator, every wrist pin for the landing gear, everything had its own 4x5 card, and you kept track of it, and you'd write on it the last action on it, and that's how you kept track of the airplane. It's immensely labor intensive. So you go to a computer system, and that's, you can either buy it commercially, where you basically fill out paperwork, send it to the people that analyze it and track it, and it's online, or you use Excel or a similar software program, but you're going to have to start tracking it. Also, your maintenance is going to be broken down, and you've got to make a decision when you buy a turbine airplane, how much you're going to fly. Do you need to be on a high volume, high utilization program, maintenance program, maintenance schedule, or is your use going to be minimal and you need it on a low utilization program? Most manufacturers provide a choice between the maintenance program that you decide to maintain your airplane under. High utilization, you're minimizing downtime, so you're breaking up will be done over probably a four-year period into phases, and they're probably monthly phases, every 30 days, every 50 hours. But you can achieve those items in a day. You know, one or two mechanics can do it in a day, as opposed to putting the airplane down for a month each time when you do all the phases all together. But you need to make that decision. So you've probably got used to babying the, if you're flying a piston twin and your altitude and you start letting down, you're very mindful of shock cooling. You're not going to have that issue with a turbine engine. They usually don't shock cool. I mean, the Garrett TPE331, when I target towed, it was a 441 I used, and you had to, when you shut down, get out, and you had to move one blade, one propeller blade width. Otherwise, there was a potential for the centrifugal compressor to warp, amazingly enough, as it heat sank. But that's the only issue I've come across. They don't shock cool. You can come down like a screaming eagle, and you can go up like a screaming eagle and not worry about shock cooling. Foreign object debris, that's a big deal. You may have been worried about chips in the propeller before, but you have a stone, a bird, a nut, or a bolt go through a turbine engine, it's going to tear it up, and it's going to be extremely expensive. Fortunately, insurance covers FOD. We call it FOD, foreign object debris damage. But you've also got to be mindful that before, you may have flown under cumulonimbus clouds trying to skirt around a storm or avoid turbulence, and you may have hit a little bit of hail, but you're relatively slow speed. But if you're at high speed and you got jet engines, turbine engines, and ice goes into that engine, it's going to tear the inside of that engine up. So FOD is a big deal. But really, those are the operational considerations. Differences between a piston and a turbine airplane is cost. That's really the biggest differentiation. Let's take the Cessna 421. I'm going to compare the 421 to a CJ, Citation Jet, you know, a 525. So you've got the Continental GTS IO 520K engines on a Cessna 421. It has a TBO of 1,200 hours and will cost $75,000 to overhaul or exchange it every 3 years. I'm basing this on 400 hours utilization a year. Okay, so keep that in your mind, 400 hours a year, comparing the 421 to the 525. So every 3 years, you're going to be buying an overhaul or doing an overhaul exchange. If you change the oil and filters every 100 hours, sparking plugs every 300 hours, as well as cleaning the fuel injectors and performing general light maintenance on the Gitzo 520K, you're going to add another $7,400 in a 1,200-hour interval. So basically, you're looking at $68.67 per engine hourly cost. And what I've done is I've taken the 75,000, I've taken the 7,400, added them together, divided by 1,200 hours, which is the TBO on that engine, to give me $68.67. But you've got to add the propeller as well, because it's not a complete propulsion system without the propeller. So you do a propeller and governor overhaul every 5 years. So at 400 hours a year equals 2,000 hours of propeller operation. Basically, when you adjust it out, you add another $3.75. So your total hourly rate for each power plant is $72.42 an hour. If you buy an older 525 Citation Jet, it's got the FJ44-1A engine, the Williams FJ44. This is an engine with two possible schedules. So remember, I touched on that, where basically if you're on the Total Assurance Program, TAP, or if you self-insure, determines basically, when I say self-insure, you don't pay the money ahead for the impending hot section and overhaul and other maintenance on that, you know, igniter plugs and things like that, which are covered by TAP, TAP. Basically, you're putting money in the bank and you know that you've got these events coming up and you've got to have the money to cover it. But if you self-insure, you've got a 2,500-hour hot section. I'm sorry, you've got a 1,750-hour hot section and a 3,500-hour overhaul. If you are on the TAP program, you've got a 2,500-hour hot section and a 5,000-hour overhaul. So it does make a big difference. So yes. The maintenance costs on a TAP engine, it'll basically cost you $550,000 every 12 and a half years. So basically, you result in an equivalent engine hourly cost of 110 hours, $110 per hour. You went from $72.42 an hour with a Gitzo on the Cessna 421. With the Citation Jet, you are at $110 per hour. And that's when you're paying to Williams or to Textron through the TAP program. But the reality is, you're probably going to be paying at an agreed rate that's probably $150 an hour. So in truth, it's really $150, not $110. If you are without the program, you're going to be less than $150 an hour. But like I said, you've got a different TBO. Bottom line, the engine reserve maintenance costs of a turbine engine are at least double what a piston engine is. There's the kicker. So I've gone through all that boring stuff about the difference between the engine hourly rate. But the fact is, bottom line is, you're going to pay double, for at least double, for a turbine powered airplane for its engine than you are a piston powered airplane. And then you've got basically fuel consumption. A CJ will burn three times what a 421 will burn. It's 44 gallons per hour in cruise for a 421. It's 141 gallons per hour for a CJ. At $4.99 per gallon for 100 low lead and $4.48 a gallon for Jet A. I've seen it lower than that, but the national average, when you go to globalair.com and you look at their fuel prices, they've got the average. I use those averages, and those were current as of Friday. And you look at the cruise speeds, it's 240 knots for the 421 and 350 knots for the CJ. And then lastly, airframe maintenance. It's about triple in the case of a CJ versus a 421. So basically, the hourly cost for airframe maintenance on a 421 is $353 an hour, and the CJ is $915 an hour. So you're at double and triple. Engines are double, airframes triple.
The 421 is already an expensive airplane to be flying around to begin with, you know, compared to, say, what some of our listeners might be flying, like a 182 or Bonanza or something. So there's some major differences there. And also, I'd like to point out that the TBO on a jet engine is mandatory, as opposed to a piston engine, which is, you know, a recommendation and also on condition. But a jet engine TBO, depending on what program it's on, is mandatory. So that's a big difference too. And a special thanks to Jeremy for spending his time with us and sharing so much great information about aircraft values. Now, this is only part one of a nearly 2-hour long interview we had with Jeremy a few weeks back. So be sure to stick around for part two, where Jeremy will go into great detail about some of the valuation guides commercially available out there, such as VREF, Aircraft Blue Book Digest, and AOPA. You definitely won't want to miss that. The full interview is already up on our Patreon site, so if you don't want to wait, head over to patreon.com/prebuyguys to check that out now. Now, that just about covers it for us this week. Be sure to check out the show notes, where I posted all the links from today's episode and some other great resources at airplaneintelpodcast.com. While there, send us your feedback by filling out the contact form or using the voicemail app. You can also start your free trial of CoFlight by tapping the CoFlight graphic on our show notes for a free 60-day trial. Lastly, if you enjoy listening to this show, let us know by leaving us a rating and review on the Apple Podcast app or whichever app you're listening from. Your feedback helps us improve the show, as well as helps other aviation enthusiasts and airplane owners find the show a little bit easier. Thanks for spending your time with us today. We really enjoyed having you aboard. Until next time, stay safe and keep the dirty side down. See you later.
Thanks for listening to the Airplane Intel Podcast. If you liked what you just heard, we hope that you'll subscribe to our show and leave us a rating or review. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching Airplane Intel. To access show notes, episode archives, and other free resources, visit us at airplaneintelpodcast.com. To get a 60-day free trial of CoFlight, head over to CoFlight.com and use the coupon code PREBUY. Also, if you'd like to support our show, visit us on patreon.com/prebuyguys. And remember, owning an airplane doesn't have to be hazardous to your wealth.